the thing about the frozen semen and the distribution. So we changed so that any bull could be available anytime, any place, anywhere in the world. It wasn't assigned to a route anymore. Customers could order whatever they wanted. So that was one of the changes. Another change was every bull basically had been priced the same. The same price.
So you could get a terrific bull and a or an ordinary bull.
But supply and demand works. And if a bull is outstanding, then he's going to be worth more than a bull that's not so good. So I introduced variable pricing to go along with their having a choice of whatever the bull they have, the bull they wanted on for their herd. And then we put in a bonus system, an incentive system for the sales force. We established every district as a business entity. I'm surprised. I'm hearing now how all that's being freaked out again. I think, where were they? What happened? Did they understand what we had before? Anyway, a lot of management changes here that we don't all agree with here.
Yeah, well, I understand it's just been sold again.
Yeah. So then there was the bonus system or incentive system put in place, the change in the distribution network, the change in the pricing for bulls, a change on the philosophy about utility beauty that we're going to give the public information that is available. We're not going to keeping that away from them, and we changed the whole attitude about advertising. That's basically the five things we put in practice. And the other reason I mentioned the Canadian bull, we got aside from it, the Canadian bull and the non-arbor bulls, we were approaching the time when the first crop of bulls were going to be graduating from this budget testing program.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were laying the groundwork for capturing the interest of the world.
Well, you must have on those Don Auger sale.
Those bulls were all part of that build-up, and the whole world knew who we were then. They had been ignoring us because of this type battle, but all of a sudden, here's ABS, and they're doing these exciting things, and then our bulls started graduating, and we hit it big with those bulls that came out for the graduating year. So the Auger bulls and the Emperor bull helped lay the groundwork for that, and from that point on, in 1965 to 1975, 100% of the increase in the volume of the AI industry was achieved by American Breeder Service. All the rest of those poor boogers out there didn't make any increase at all. Some maybe a little bit, and somebody else lost, but we used to get individual reports on all of them. They don't do it anymore because they were so embarrassed by it. But from 65 to 75, ABS achieved 100% of the growth in the AI industry. And it was this all of these things bearing fruit. So once we turned it around, it just
It's a good thing they listened to you then. You're the one that pulled them out.
It really went gangbusters after that.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to go back to university.
Okay.
And the industry really then copied.
The industry, well, what I gather is that the industry was copying ABS right along. And let me ask you, Matt, they tread rather delicately, but not too delicately, he does, on the... It said you were part of the three that were in charge, and then all of a sudden you weren't, and there was all. How did they put it? I've got it written down here somewhere. That's why I need an index. On your profile, they don't even mention it. But then in the book itself, it said that everybody came and there was almost a mutiny because you had been taken out of the three that were running it. Is that the story? But obviously you didn't leave the company, you had other things. What was your new responsibility? I mean, I don't need to put this in the book, I just wanted to ask, here's one of the stories that doesn't get told in this book.
I was the manager of livestock, farm and maintenance. I had been vice president of operations, it's called.
When would this have been that?
In 1965, the time when the executive committee was formed.
This is where Herb reported to you before that, and then at that point, I think those were kind of split off.
Yeah, they were split off. They marked the responsibility for operations.
but it see, it's one of the maddening things about the book is it indicates something and then it doesn't tell us much or finish the story. From what I read here, it sounded as if you could have been out. It said Bartlett negotiated it. I can see where it is on the page, but I don't see the page yet. And what section it would be in. Because he takes something and starts and goes and moves up and then... it's the Black Friday. Okay, Black Friday. Here's what it says. Few tears were shed over most of the decisions announced. And this is 1965?
Yes.
This would have been when they were putting your things into practice. But there were strong feelings about Matt Dietrich's replacement by Bob Elsass in the three-man command, commonly called the Troika. And then it tells what you had done and company pioneer and all this. And Elsass had worked mostly behind the scene. During the early part of December in 65, all field personnel were called to Madison for a meeting to discuss the new administration responsibilities. Don Pelkey, the Western area manager and one of the first employees in Wisconsin, called an evening meeting for anyone who wished to recommend that Matt and not Bob Elsass sit on the executive committee. It was Dave Bartlett's tact and diplomacy that prevented a major rebellion at that meeting. He carefully outlined Rock's meetings. But that must have been hard for you. Well, I saw that some of these Pelkeys seem to have gotten fired, too, at some point, or lost their jobs, at least one of them.
I don't think you could. I would say that everybody who's been in ABS management has, at one time or another, had some hurt.
Mm-hmm. Had some hurt.
Hurt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you kept on doing important things, but you were no longer one of the three that were making the major decisions or something?
See, prior to that, it was prior to the meeting that you attended in 60 in Chicago. There was, Phil was present. And David Schultz, the vice president of sales.
No, he was gone before I came here.
Youngdahl was made to follow him.
But he had the heart attack, and yeah. Then Stu, somebody was the vice president of sales, that led really
right.
Down the tube.
Right, and I was the vice president of sales.
He came from Up John.
Of operations.
Stu Hurley.
Yeah. Right. And I was not involved in the sessions that apparently you said was taking place in Chicago. The first word I got, I found out later what the indication of what was happening was that I was on vacation in Florida. And Dave Bartlett called me and he was asking for information, something that they were apparently working on. And I said, and he indicated it was an urgent. I said, well, should I come back? Vacation. No, he said, you stay here. I said, whatever this information was that he was wanting, I said, we can get that. And then when I got back, I had a call from Phil Higley to come to his, when he lived in an apartment with an insurance. And that was when he gave me the news.
Well, I think this all must have transpired before I got involved, because I don't remember any of that. All I know who I was invited to meet with them. They were the ones that were there, and so they must have. I know they'd already fired Stu Hurley,
yeah.
and his cohort.
Mm-hmm. So some of that, and I think they had made the decision that Lee Lamb was to be retired early.
Yeah.
So those were all things that happened before I got to the meeting. All I did was had to do with the marketing and the breeding part of it. But so I think this part must have transpired, because I don't remember having any discussion about that. By knowing how that got structured. That.
And, he told me that at that meeting of his department, that that's the organization that Dave Bartlett was going to be taking over, head of operations or production, and that Irv, who was at that time, had the farm, and in addition to the process. he had the farm operation too, and the livestock. And he was moved only into labs, and I took over the farm and livestock and maintenance. And right shortly before I retired, Dave told me that, he mentioned it there, that, during those discussions, there was a proposed that I'd be terminated. He objected to it. He said, that's all. And I remember when we, they met with Herb and I and charge of distribution.
Bud Cunningham?
No, no.
John Peterson?
John Peterson. And Dave says, I don't know anything about you guys. You just go ahead and keep doing what you've been doing, he said. That's all I can do. He said, I don't know how to direct you.
Well, I had an office just across the hall from Herb when Dave came in to tell him what the structure was going to be, and I never heard such a shouting in my life, and since I've never heard. Herb just blew this back. And he's really upset for you. I mean, I heard your name. Very easy.
Well, we're all learning a lot today.
You mean some of these things you haven't discussed?
I know another one that involves Matt, and I only secondhand realize, but I've always felt badly about it. But I know Matt was, there's an association called the National Association of Mammal Breeders, which is the network that all the AI studies work with, a voluntary group that involves almost all of anybody that's in the business is a member. But Matt was the vice president of that group in the late 50s, early 60s.
Early 60s.
And normally, automatically, we move up to become the president. But it had been a delicate relationship between the ABS and the co-ops. I mean, we were not members, I don't think, when they first got started, but later they became members. But then, gradually, we became accepted, and Matt was the vice president to become president. And I think the battle was over the due structure. And I think Phil had carried forward a proper one, but maybe a little harsh, but to put some cap on how much the dues would be, because ABS was growing and we were going to be paying most of the dues for the whole thing. And he thought it should be capped.
It was a certain amount of money per unit, insemination unit, sold.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the dues structure.
Anyway,
so if you had growth, you paid more and more dues.
Yeah.
So anyway, that he ran that through and got it approved, I guess. But the price that got paid was everybody was so mad at ABS for doing that they would not elect or not move Matt on to become president. He was, I don't know whether he went off the board then or just didn't get elected
president. No,
that basically right?
Well, actually, it's to start with in this story was that it got to the place where some of the other co-ops felt that ABS should be represented. After all, they were contributing a good portion to the support of that. And in the discussions, they finally realized, well, Rock and Phil both had created so much animosity in the industry that they would well be a possible. In fact, I think one time Rock was nominated and he was for directorship and he wasn't elected. So they suggested that maybe I could act, because I had some relationship with the other organizations prior to the time of the ABS, and just fit in right that whoever was going out that year, that I was elected the director. And I had served a three-year term and was up for re-election, and which that was a possibility that could be, although the committee itself was elected to president, there was a chance that I could be elected president. And that was when Phil was going to propose this at the meeting, so he asked to meet with the directors in advance of the general meeting and told them what he was going to propose, because he thought he was doing it in all fairness to the other members of what he was going to propose. And they might not want to have me on the board of directors. But that was because of Phil's honesty. That was, and that's what happened. That he proposed that, and I was no longer
so Matt is
satisfactory material for
the victim of some unfortunate thing. But right. I want to tell you, Matt is one of the real wheel horses of this place.
Well, this is what I realized from everything I've heard and from what the Black Book was saying. And
maybe as much as anybody, he built it, you know.
Yeah.
And oversaw almost every building here was under his tutelage.
And often those that do the building don't get the credit they ought to.
I think it was the support of the personnel in the organization that made it possible for me to continue on, because I mean, I had the support of most of the people that I worked with.
You sure did it, Irv. Boy, he really came to your defense. Amazing.
Well, I imagine there were hard feelings towards Rock with a lot of this then, too. Did you figure that he was doing what he had to do, or?
Well, I think I can't speak to that really. I guess I never sensed there was hard feelings against Rock. No,
mm-hmm.
I don't, because I mean, I think they knew it was. There might have been hard feelings about the utilities beauty battle,
mm-hmm.
but I think I think once the economic thing was
apparent,
and the steps need to be taken. I guess I didn't sense that they were mad upset about
it. No, I think it was for, and this is very intentional, a lot of it was rightly wrong, it was blamed on Bob Elson.
Let me just be sure I'm getting it. Go on.
Whereas the executives at that point, like he said, was inward, and they didn't know what was going on out there, is absolutely correct, because Bob, when he came on and had the job of setting up the Project Best program, he was on the road constantly.
Okay, this is Bob Walton, not Bob Elsis.
He was on the road constantly, and in contact with not just breeders, but all the sales force.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was really gathering all this information up. Hey, we've got to do something. And so that's what drove him, because he had that touch with what's going on outside.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, of course, that made it somewhat acceptable is that this pointed out there, the fact that Don Pelkey did try to promote movement within the sales force that I'd be put on the executive committee in place of Bob Elsis, because he was not very well accepted in the sales force, and that was the meeting that place that night after you there.
I don't remember being there, so I must not have been invited to that one.
I think you would be very well I think it was set up that there was a meeting, they're supposed to discuss the situation. In fact, what Don was proposing, that if they didn't accept the group, would accept the fact that I should be proposed for to replace Bob on the committee. And they weren't, that proposal wasn't accepted, they were going to resign, rebel.
That was what seems to be being said here, that there was would have been a major rebellion if Bartlett hadn't.
There's a lot of discussion, and some of them were questioned, of course. And before they got to, and it was set up that at a certain time, Dave and I don't know who else, it seemed like there was two, were to come in and accept their proposal if they were going to. They never got a chance, got that place where they got down to a vote before Dave got there. And then he got involved and started talking to him, and he sort of eased things over and felt that it was best to continue on, that Bob had too much to contribute to what the problems that was in his knowledge of the financial end of it. And, but I think he feels good too, that at least Don was, of course, he was one of the first ones I worked with in the organization, so we had a long friendship too, but I feel that he was, felt he should propose that this take place and help to cover some of the problems and hardships that he maybe didn't experience in a situation like that.
Maybe it was. In the interest of time, maybe I'll leave you with these two gentlemen, but I'll run home and get these other papers that you asked about. But I think that might be interesting from what you had asked me, fill in some gaps, and come back here then.
Okay, that wouldn't take you long, would it?
No, just a few miles away here.
And okay. I'll go down and see if I can find that way.
Okay, that'd be fine.
It's a biology. When he died, they did a memorial there.
Okay, just one thing in defense of distribution back at that time. You said that we were distributing bulls only to certain routes. And that was partly the marketing situation, too. That you were charging, and you have to add more money when you do the program, which you did, and so there's a flat rate on everybody. Once you came in and set that up, then you could justify what was necessary. But in distribution, we were limited as to what the marketing could do for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those are accidents of history.
Yeah,
you know.
No, sure.
All right, I'll run through that.
Okay, fine. We'll turn this off for a minute then. Talking here to Matt, the rest have vanished for a short while, and Matt was in charge of Asheville when we stopped through in either Christmas 49 or Christmas 50, whichever year it was we went. And I'm asking about mount animals.
At that time, we were using females, and figured that was, necessary to track the bull. Of course, you.
And was there such a thing as a nympho cow that would be in heat?
There were some. And
because I seem to have
that.
A strong memory of.
And we may have had one, I can't recall. Of course, we did have the artificial cow that you described.
Which didn't look like much
okay.
like a cow.
And then I don't know when they started using males or steers. And that was actually was encouraged here with our veterinary standpoint of health, disease, that even though these cows were tested and trying to be sure that they were did not have a disease, there was always a chance when the collection was being obtained that the collector might miss it and the bull wouldn't enter the cow's vagina with the penis, in which case it was a chance for contamination. And so they were encouraging to use males and to avoid that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had some bulls that they just won't work on a steer, and some they use other bulls sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we'd have a cow around for an occasion, but
no perfume you had that you could spray onto a steer to make it smell like a cow in heat.
No, they didn't.
You'd think they could have developed that in your labs.
But unless I was gone on vacation or something at Christmas time, I probably was there, and I seem to vaguely remember that. Somebody from Wisconsin had stopped by.
Yeah, well, it would have been my dad and mother and myself and my fiance and my brother Craig, younger.
We
at
didn't
least.
Have too much contact with the people up as far as the country. We just occasionally, Phil would get down there, but we were somewhat isolated down there.
Well, let's see, I might have some other questions. Okay, we're talking about page 3B at the moment where I've got the facts not right about coming to Wisconsin with the university. And as far as memory, I'm going to have to put in my preface that a lot of this book is on oral history, memory, and that all memory is present tense in that you remember what you remember, and whether you remember it accurately or not is something else again. So you have to put in a kind of disclaimer, and I've found things that, well, even in my own family, one person remembers it this way and another person remembers it another way and another person doesn't remember it at all.
Right.
And so that disclaimer will have to be in there, that there's going to be a lot of stuff that isn't exact, but it's as exact as I can make it, given our human frailty. So let's see. Okay, in 1947, Rock moves his stud to Wisconsin near Madison. He does this with the initial acceptance of the university, with the understanding that there will not be competition. By now, there are a number of co-ops in Wisconsin, some with their own bulls.
That's good. It's competition with the university.
Competition with the university.
University operation.
Okay. By now, there are a number of co-ops in Wisconsin, some with their own bulls, some buying from the university or from Prentice. No one foresees any difficulty. However, two squeals go up. This is true, this part then, isn't it?
Yes.
One from some of the co-ops about a private operator running co-op competition with them. The other is from Froker.
And I think part of the Froker's objection was that one, I think it was Iowa Grant. I'm not sure, but it was two counties that had a co-op. And when they came to Conrock and asked to be taken over by them, and they then were operating in some of the same areas as the university. So that meant that he actually would be in competition with the university. And that's when Froker, and he said, well, you agreed that you will not compete with us.
Mm-hmm.
And Knox said, well, Iowa Grant went to the university and asked them to take over their operation, and they turned them down. Said, well, we're going to do the service anyhow. We don't even buy your bulls. It's a matter of trying to get something out of their business. And so that's when they came to Rock, and he bought them out. And so
now wait. Well,
excuse me.
Go back a sentence or two. The university. Iowa came to, Rock says they came to me. I didn't go out after.
Right, they went to the university.
Okay, that's what I missed.
Yeah.
Iowa first to university.
So
and is this over in Iowa, or is it, do we have an Iowa County
Iowa
over
County.
In the corner of
yeah,
the,
right Iowa
there.
County next to Grant.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Iowa Grant. I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
was,
I'm
Iowa
not familiar with that part of
yeah.
the state law. So they first came to the university, and the university didn't...
when they wanted to sell their bulls and so forth.
Oh, wanted to sell.
To sell their business. They wanted to sell their business.
And business, and the university said, turn them down.
Turn them down. We'll take over your services, but we don't need your pay you anything for your business.
Okay, and so then they came to Rock.
They came to Rock.
And then Rock bought the business and bought the bulls and then destroyed the bulls because they weren't good enough.
Right.
Was that called Badger Bulls?
No.
No. As I gather, there were three. That was another one. There were the Badger breeders.
That was up north.
Up north.
Toronto.
Oh, that's Badger.
But there was...
what tank was it called?
Well, I've got the names.
The university one then developed into a co-op.
Yeah, and Charlie Crum ran.
Charlie Crum ran.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was central Wisconsin. Southern Wisconsin.
There was one located around Waupun.
That's East Central.
Okay, so there was the northern one. That was the Badger something.
Badger.
Which is now 21st Century Genetics.
Now 21st Century Genetics. And then there was the Waupun one, and that was
East Central Breeders.
And then there was one other.
Tri-State. West Peak.
And then there was the Iowa ones that wanted to sell out.
At that time, and then...
Yeah. But those were the three big co-ops
apparently so.
That I had gathered were... and then, so we'll add some good detail to it, because he said they came to me, you turned them down, and I will provide service wherever it's asked for.
And then they were providing service in the same area. And so that meant he was competing, Prentice was competing with the university, and that was what, as I understand it, that's what started the friction between the two. And you're no longer abiding by the agreement that you will not compete with us. And they said, well, we bought the business, and that's where the service is, and we'll continue to provide the service. And you can understand why Rock would say this.
And the university is already competing there with Iowa?
Yeah.
That's right. The university was competing with Iowa. That's good.
And the university then they formed a cooperative afterwards, and it was called Southern Breeders, or Southern Wisconsin.
Southern Breeders.
Southern Breeders, and which eventually.
Tri-State.
I thought it had some snappy name.
Say what?
I thought it had a snappy name.
To the Southern?
Yeah. But I.
I've always heard it called Southern Breeders, but.
See, what else did you find to question there?
Well, I think you indicated yourself as a question mark as to whether the other studs that run for profit, but to help finance the Wisby stud, I don't think they really did, at least to start with. They weren't generating enough income to support.
That might have been the intent, but it's not the reality.
Okay, I think they've got that down there. I'm going to try to run that. Write that. So that was. So what was supporting the research arm then? His business and his grant from his mother?
Yeah. In fact, that's what supported the other four organizations too.
Okay. So he was really pouring his all mm-hmm. into it.
Well, right. he borrowed money.
Oh, yeah.
That was always my impression, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're sure whether he's going to meet the payroll until he borrowed some money.
That's pretty impressive.